This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined on this bonus episode of the podcast by a man who is probably recognisable to many of you. If you don't know him, welcome to Flav, presenter, producer, and now owner of the Fighting Cock podcast. Welcome, Flav.
Thank you, mate.
You're a businessman now.
Very businessman. I'm really, really happy to be on here. We talked about doing this for a while, and I'm happy to do it. I love The Extra Inch. I love what you guys have done, and it was great to be a part of it at the beginning, but it's even sort of more special in a way watching you guys go out and do it and make it proper.
Very kind of you, Flav. What we're going to do is first talk about the beginnings of the Fighting Cock. So it's sort of, I guess the first thing to think about is, where did the original idea come from for you?
Can I just apologise for any chickens or children in the background? Obviously I'm isolating like everybody else, so just like, you know, excuse the noises of my household. Where did it start? I used to write a blog called Cocks to the West for a message board called THFC Latest 2, which was kind of like a really weird, really interesting, very cliquey message board where it was basically frequented by about 30, 40 people who became pretty close friends by and large. But anybody else who wanted to get on the message board, once this click had formed, found it very difficult and a bit weird. There's lots of nuances to the way you needed to behave on this message board in order to survive or not get fed up and leave. And as weird as that sounds now, because the internet is so much bigger and there is no privacy, in the internet back then had a much more sort of, it was secular. So you belonged to message boards, you stuck to the message boards, you know, so a lot of it was closed off, there were private forums, and it was very different. So we created quite a unique sense of humour. And I just had this idea to write a blog that was in keeping with the tone of the message board, but was also about Tottenham. So it was, if I was being really bold about it, I would say it was a kind of satirical look at Tottenham. But I've read some of the stuff now, and there's not much satire in there at all. Right? Rather, it's just shit. It's just shit work, really. But I was a kid. And anyway, I was always interested in producing content in some form. And so the idea of doing a podcast didn't, you know, I used to listen to the Spurs show a lot. I used to like Phil Cornwell's impressions of Juan de Ramos and Martin Yeo and stuff. And that's what got me hooked onto podcasts, but there weren't much around then. It was just that. And I think there's the Cock on Ball or something like that. I can't remember. So it just felt like there was a niche. And the reason why I thought there was a niche was because the Spurs show weren't talking about Tottenham the way I felt about them, the conversations I was having with my friends and my brothers. They were very kind of negative and they reached an age in life where they'd seen it all and they just wanted they'd been damaged by Tottenham for so long that they become tired of it. Whereas I was, from starting the podcast, was I was more philosophical about what it meant to be Tottenham. It weren't about winning, it was about belonging and that kind of stuff, which is as faded as years go on.
Yeah, you had a different energy to your support for Spurs than they did, I guess, and there's nothing wrong with either approach, but you're right that the Fighting Cock as it evolved is very, very different to the Spurs show. But in terms of that evolution, did you have plans for it at the beginning?
No, there's never been a plan. There's no plan. We're 10 years in now, pretty much. Nearly 10 in July. And there's never been a plan. The plan was always, can we talk about Tottenham in an interesting and funny way that will resonate with other Spurs fans that think the way that we do. That was the plan. There was nothing more to it than that. And I think you see as the show's very similar to what it used to be like when we started, but it's very different as well. Remember when we started, it was very, a lot of it was about trying to change football for the better, trying to reduce ticket prices, lobbying the club for safe standing. We did a survey back in the day where we collected the thoughts and opinions, wrote out a survey, collected the thoughts and opinions of between 2,000 and 2,500 people, which is well over the number you need to get a reliable section of Spurs support or any subsection of society. You don't need that many, so it's very conclusive, and it's about safe standing. And we published one, and we hand delivered a copy of this document that we produced, the report on this survey that we'd undertook, and we hand delivered it to the club. I hand delivered it to the club, so I felt that was such an important thing that we should bring standing back to football. Not in a million years would I do that now. Not in a million years. it's a waste of time. And that's a shame, really. What I found is that football fans, Spurs fans in particular, some other clubs are better at it than us. Most of them just want to go and watch the football. They don't want to fight. They don't want the football club that they follow to be another thing that makes them frustrated, or as much as they can. And if the players and the team weren't doing it on the pitch, they're certainly not going to create more problems themselves by fighting the club about ticket prices. They just want to pay the money and go home. If we win, great. If we lose, you know, that's a shame, but we go back to our house. And that's what I found, that through 2 or 3 years of campaigning for what I thought most Spurs fans wanted at the club and football in a wider sense, I just realised I was a bit naive and in the minority. Most fans just didn't give a shit.
So do you think there was part of you at the start that thought, I've got these views, I know other people have views, maybe I can create some kind of groundswell of support and actually achieve something through the podcast?
I think once we realised that there was an audience there, that with that audience, like this, bear in mind, this is me as a naive, less mature person than I am now. When we started 10 years ago is a long time.
Working in the charitable sector as well?
I was working in the charitable sector. I was very left-wing focused. My drive was for the betterment of the everyman. And, you know, I used to read a lot of fucking stupid, well, not stupid books, but idealistic books that carve your identity when you're formulating ideas as you know, in your late teens to early 20s. And I was reading all the books that made me feel like the world was unjust. And I just carried that forward into football, and probably should have done it in something that means a little bit more than football. But, you know, that was where I was at. I was working with charities, working with young people, helping them, trying to help them, and reading these books that were influencing me in the way, and became like, football's wrong, isn't it? There's a lot about football that needs to be fixed. Like, we're getting bent over each week for our ticket prices. We want safe standing. No one listens to us. Atmosphere is being quelled. We've been told to sit down constantly. We need to fight back. This is our game. And the fact is, it's just bollocks, isn't it? I was just caught up in it and trying to do something with the podcast that made a difference. Did fuck all.
do you have memories of your first Fighting Cock podcast? Do you remember kind of who was there, what the equipment was, where you were based? What was the plan?
Vividly. Again, no plan. It was just my little brother had a first in sound engineering and like at university, he went to Brighton. So he was really switched on, and not just switched on in terms of being able to capture sound, but in order to be creative with the jingles and you know, to this day, still helping us with the creative aspect of the audio stuff that we do. So I knew I had him, which was the hardest bit, right? Because if you have someone technical who can do this shit, it makes it so much easier. Or it would be impossible without them. So I had them. And then I knew I had relationships. So I had relationships with Ricky, my best mate, who, as we all know, is one of the funniest people you ever meet, one of the nicest people you ever meet. And I knew if I could get a conversation going with Ricky on a mic, that we can't fail here. Like me and Ricky, we'd go football and we'd spend 80% of the day just cracking up and laughing. So me and Rick always found a way of making each other laugh. And that's not because we're funny. It's just that we find each other funny. And that's a really great thing to be able to take into a podcast, I have found. But obviously I didn't want to launch the podcast and no one listened to it. Like, there's one thing I mean, all of us are egotistical enough to want to do something that we think other people will enjoy listening to. We want to produce something. And it's not, we're not producing it for us. We're not artists, right? We're producing something because we want other people to listen to what we have to say. If you're an artist, it doesn't matter if one person or a million people watch it. It's about the creative aspect of what you're doing. But with podcasting or any kind of broadcasting, whether it be written journalism or anything, this is ego-based. We're saying stuff because we want other people to listen to us, right? So I didn't want to start the Fighting Cock without having an audience there ready-made. So I thought there was two people I knew who had a ready-made audience that I thought the podcast could then sort of leech off. It was Jack Cussey to Trunk, who had at the time an incredibly successful YouTube animation series. I don't think he realized until later how big that was at the time at YouTube, but he was getting 100,000 views 12, 13 years ago. Like when I worked at Ball Street, which is a football media company, 98% of our videos wouldn't hit 100,000, and that was in the how many people are using YouTube now. So that's how big that was. So I had him and Jack, and he was interested in getting involved because, like all of us, he wants his opinions heard and his voice heard. And then Spooky as well. So Spook had Dear Mr. Levy. It does have Dear Mr. Levy, which remains the best written stuff out there, in my opinion, for Tottenham. But back then he was prolific. He was writing constantly, and I'd read everything. And I always admired him and admired that to his blog. And I thought that that had an element of class that most other blogs didn't. And he was writing about football, but it looked great. The website looked great. Had these nice little weird cartoons on them, and it was just an interesting place to go and read about Spurs. And he was well up for it as well. And then from that point, it was just building. It was finding people that I liked and get on with, and asking if they wanted to get involved, like yourself and Bardi and all the others. But yeah, the first time, sorry to answer your question, I'm guilty of going on tangent then, sorry, but the first time I was in a pub in called the Alexandra in Crouch End, and we asked them if we could just take an area of the pub. It was me, Spooky, Ricky, Jack, and that's it, I think, and then we had Alex as well, my little brother, who was on the mic. Yeah, and it was awful. Like, you listen to it now, it's shit. It's so bad. It's so, so bad. But there is a tinge of or a hint of what we had the potential of doing. And like, when I say that, I don't mean anything. We haven't done anything really other than sit and record. But so the potential of what the podcast could be, there was a hint of it. I can hear it in it when we were recording. But I've only listened to it a couple of times. It's really, really cringeworthy.
I remember when I got involved with the Fighting Cock, I started originally sending in my recordings for your halftime section, and it was about the youth players. Mm. And then we kind of all became friends, and you invited me to come onto the podcast. And I turned up after work. I'd come straight from work. I was wearing a suit. And at the time, you were recording in the secondhand clothes shop, vintage clothes shop in Crouch End.
Yep.
And I met you all. Went for a beer first in the pub down the road. And then we went to this clothes shop, and it was not what I was expecting. So it was really dark in there to start with.
What was you expecting? Sorry,
I don't quite know what I expected, but not this. It was very sort of... And this is not meant to be insulting, because it turned out to be wonderful, but it was very sort of disorganized and chaotic. There was nothing like written. The running order was maybe a few handwritten notes, literally like a few words. There was just nothing. There was no structure, no order. And I'm like someone who needs structure and order. Yeah. So right now I've got in front of me bullet points. I might not stick to them, but that's how I like to work. I like to have bullet points in front of me to work from. And I was thinking to myself, like, how, like, these guys must be geniuses. How are they making this work with so little kind of,
do you know how it is? If I'm preparing for an interview, I wouldn't do that. I have it in me to prepare. But the Fighting Cock isn't successful because it's well structured. It isn't successful because we know how to put together a podcast, or we thought we did back then. It wasn't. It's nothing to do with planning and structure. It's only to do with the chemistry between us. Or that's all it is. And that's what I've learned. You know, we can do, if we're getting a guest on, we'll do the correct amount of research to ensure that the conversation is interesting. But it ultimately just relies on, can I make Ricky laugh during the podcast? If I can, then the podcast is going to be good. Or is T going to drink a bottle of rum and get, or, like, Windy, are you going to deviate from your general persona online and the way you talk about Spurs just on our podcast. And if you do, then we've got it. That's it. And that's what I've found, because we can all talk about Tottenham. Like, there are so many Tottenham podcasts out there. Like when we started, I think there was three, right? Including the Fighting Cock. There are so many out there now. You can hear anybody talk about Spurs. Even people that are not Spurs fans, journalists specialise in Spurs. Mm. And they might not even support the club. So if you're looking for a podcast just to hear about Tottenham, then there is, take your pick and go and listen to anyone any week and you'll get what you need. I think the reason why people stick with the Fighting Cock is because of what we bring other than Tottenham, and that's just a genuine love and admiration and will to entertain each other. And I think that's the secret, if there is one.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
When did you realise then that you had something that could be more than what it was at that time? When did you think, I can build this? When did you realise that this could become something that actually starts to make some money?
In terms of a business sense?
Just generally, what was the point where you suddenly thought this is something more than just four blokes sat around a table in a vintage clothes shop talking about Spurs?
Just so people know, that it was a really gloomy, dark vintage clothes shop. She had the lights on, people start coming in and interrupting the recording. So
there was a toilet that didn't flush.
Yeah,
you barely knew how to use the recording equipment at the time. So yeah. Like you would just have to test constantly.
Yeah. It was chaotic, but it was great. I loved the fact, I never knew that about you, Windy. I never knew that you came in walking going, what the fuck is this shit? So we didn't have analytics on the podcast for the first 3 years, I don't think. Maybe two, 3 years. We didn't know if anyone was listening or how many were listening, because podcasting is still in its infancy in terms of types of media that can be consumed. It's very young. And they're only now finding out ways of producing reliable analytics that means that the industry is going to be attractive to advertisers. But back in the day, we didn't know, so we was literally just doing it for the fun. And then we had this guy called Mitch turn. Look, this is the great thing about the Fighting Cock, is whenever we kind of need something, someone turns up and gives it to us. I don't know if you just notice it and stuff's always happening, but we needed a website and Case turned up out of the blue and built us one without even us asking. And we needed an app. And this guy Mitch came up. He's just like, it's so weird, because I'm not even sure if he listens anymore, but he just turned up. He built an app because, yeah, he's glad you can have that. He became like a part of what we were doing for about 5 or 6 months. And then he developed a piece of software that enabled us to capture how many listens we were getting. And and then he just disappeared. I don't know where he is. I have no idea where he is. Whatever happened to him. He did all this work for us and then just decided that was that. But yeah, it was then you start to think, oh, well, hang on, like so people are listening. This isn't just an ego trip. People are choosing to spend time with us. And the algorithm, sorry, the metric that he set up to capture the audience was quite conservative. So we was around back in 8 years ago, maybe, we were getting about 3,000 or 4,000 a week, if I remember rightly. And then we just noticed, because it was tracked in every episode, it just kept going up. Not exponentially, but almost like, you know, you could just see the growth, and we were having more and more fun, and we were having more ideas, and we're doing interesting things like the survey, and I started to think about things like the 1882 movement, which I know we're going to talk about. But it felt like we were doing something good, but money was never a part of it. Money, in fact, was almost the opposite of what we wanted at the time. Like, we were off at the beginning, we were getting offered deals to do some work with certain people, and it was like a badge of honor to say, you know, shove your money up your ass. We're all about our team, all about Spurs, and all about the shirt and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't, I was just aware that we were doing something good and people enjoyed. It wasn't, in terms of the business side of it, the money-making side of it, it wasn't until I worked at Bull Street, I joined them about 6 years ago, where I realized, firstly, they helped me, and I say helped me, they changed it, changed my perception about money in football. If I'm being really honest, I kind of went in there with quite like with a position of like branding in football is evil. We should remove it, remove the money from the game, remove it. To going in there and realizing actually, I don't know, it was, I guess to some degree, I was like, I looked at it, if I'm being really honest, and I was like, shit, there is a lot of money to be made here. It's not even a case of, you know, it's almost, you can do this, you can maintain your integrity to some degree. I definitely have taken some of the magic out of it by bringing money into it, unfortunately, but it's just always going to be that way. But if I can maintain what the crux of what the Fighting Cock is, like, well, we would never change what we would say, how we talk about things for the sake of a sponsor, then maybe this is a risk worth taking. And it was tentatively done, and we were asking people, if we got a sponsor, would you stop listening? And no one said no. And what, again, another realization is most people don't care. Most people aren't invested in your product in as much as you think they are. I've learned this, that the vast majority of people listening don't care about the Fighting Cock. And I guess I naively thought that people listening care about it and are invested in it as much as I am. But of course they can't be, because they don't live and breathe it every day for the last 10 years. They just enjoy it for 40 minutes. They turn it off and they forget all about us, which is the way it should be. So I was walking around with this idea, like, well, you know, people are going to be ashamed of us or me for monetizing what we do. And then I realized that most people don't give a shit, and they're just happy for you if you're doing successfully. You know what I mean? So yeah, the money side of it, the business side of it, at Ball Street, I learned about the business in media, you know, football media specifically. But I learned about how to monetize, how not to monetize, how to create something that fits in on brand, and talk to the industry. Because I don't know if you want to hear the story, but we're working with a lot of a lot of betting brands and other brands will come to you, and they will talk to you because they know they don't want to go through an agency, because an agency understands the business, so they want to come to you direct, and they want to exploit your ignorance ultimately. And what happened was, because I learned so much at Ball Street, and like when I say so much, like every day I was learning something about business in football media, that when these people were talking to me, I realized if I was being undercut, I realized if they were playing or if they were serious, and when I could conduct myself in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do if I hadn't gone to Ball Street, that meant that they knew what I was talking about. Either they disappeared really quickly and didn't waste any more of my time and theirs, but also they realized, all right, this guy knows what he's talking about. And I'm sure you've already experienced some of this, Windy, as well, but it's so I don't know if I've answered your question there at all.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And the fact that you joined Ball Street, I mean, we all kind of watched your career unfold in some ways, and I'm sure listeners were the same, because when we all heard about you joining Ball Street, because they were using you in front of the camera and on their podcast as well. And you were talking about it on the Fighting Cock, so you're almost in a way documenting your own career trajectory. But Ball Street came about for you through the Fighting Cock as well, didn't it? They approached you through the Fighting Cock, basically.
Yeah, that was so the Fighting Cock got nominated for a, actually say got nominated, what it was, the FBAs, the Football Blogging Awards, right? And I admire them, and the guy Anthony Cooper, I know, you know, I've met him a few times, and he's a lovely guy. But this system of getting people approved to be up for an award at the Football Blogging Awards, or I think it's the Football Content Awards now, was ingenious, because it forced everybody to promote their brand over and over again. So you had to get a certain number of nominations, and someone would have to act FBAs in order for that to be considered a nomination. So you've just got these influencers, and many of them didn't know that they were, that what such a thing was at the time. They're just pushing out this bloke's brand for free. It was fucking brilliant, genius. Anyway, we did it, and we got shortlisted after they listened to different podcasts. We got shortlisted for best football podcast in, I guess, England or UK. And me, Bardi, Windy, you were there, Windy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you was there, because you shared a room with Bardi. And my engineer, Al, T, Case and Ricky, is that everyone? I think. And we've gone from recording in a pub, in a bedroom, in a shop, in, you know, no support, no actual backing or anything like that, to at this award show in Manchester, and we were all togged up. We looked the bollocks, like everyone was looked lovely, you know, suits and that, and but we started very early, and we started
too early, so we'll say.
I mean, we're talking like proper early, like the minute I woke up, I started. And by the time the night came round, win the award. Like, I was all right, I felt. Anyway, so Matt, who runs Ball Street at the time, we were very fledgling then. They had some good successes, but they were building a team. They wanted to build a team, and they didn't know about us. And they interviewed me, and I'm not sure if I can talk about this on your podcast, but I was under the influence of several things. And and when you are, well, what happens to me under this particular thing that I was under the influence by, it makes me very gregarious, talkative and engaging and interested in what other people are saying. So I did this. They held the camera off and I introduced it to the fighting cock. I've seen the footage. It's mad because like, how they didn't know I was off my tits. I don't know. And I introduced each one who was with me. I don't know if you were there, but it was a line of us. And I introduced them and all the qualities they had and why they were great for the podcast. for some reason, this resonated with Matt, and he literally about a week later, he ran up and went like, "We're interested in taking you on, but we need a couple of months. Can you sit and you know wait?" And I was like, I was already thinking about leaving the job in the charity sector because after 12 years of doing that, I was exhausted and done. I couldn't hear another harrowing story about some kid, I don't know, whatever, all the bad things that happen to young people in poverty. So I was looking for an out, and I basically forced her arm somewhat by saying, "Look, I had been offered another job and another company, doesn't matter, I can't say the name of it, I don't think, but then they pulled me forward. So they pulled me in 3 months earlier than they should have done, and as a result I just sat in an office with fuck all to do for 3 months. But what they did do, which they brought me, because my background up until that point was also editorial and magazine based and design based, so project leading designers and editorial to produce magazines and websites and stuff like that. So that's what I thought I was going in to do at Ball Street. I thought that they wanted me to help build a website. That's how they brought me in. But what actually they wanted was another presenter, someone to be on camera. Now, as I've talked about ego and that, and I'm enjoying this, I guess, because I get to talk about myself. But one of the things I never wanted to do was like presenter. I found it cringy and a bit like it's not something I wanted to do. The podcast is one thing, but the Fighting Cock podcast isn't presenting. I'm not presenting. I'm engineering or leading a discussion, right? Or engineering a discussion in a certain way, but it isn't presenting in the conventional form, is it? You just turn the mic on and we talk. It's not like presenting for YouTube or anything like that. So it wasn't something I wanted to do or be on YouTube, really. Because remember at the time, Arsenal Fan TV was quite big and I didn't want to be tarred with that. But they forced me to do it. They didn't want me to build a website. They never wanted a website. They just said, "Well, get him in on this percent, put up this idea, and then we'll just keep sticking him in camera until he does it or quit." So yeah, I did it.
That's mad. That is, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that you hadn't got any of this kind of talent as well.
It's not legal. You can't bring someone and get them to sign a contract with certain
for one
target.
Particular job description.
Yeah,
and then just pull the rug out.
Yeah, exactly. Which is what they've done. But Matt, it was Matt's idea, and he came from the right place. He believed that was a quality I had, and I just decided to I'd go along with it. I help. I mean, I just, what am I going to do? Walk away? Go back to my old job? Or I'd do it. So I just managed to kind of. I had James next to me, who is an amazing individual and incredible at what he does, and not just like what you don't see behind the scenes, how hard he works. He's mad. I couldn't be bothered to work as hard as he can, but he's so ambitious. So I had him, who could be the chipper presenter type, and then I could just be this prick who's not really reluctant about it all, and it kind of worked.
So you had your editorial skills from your job for the charity magazine. You went to Ball Street and you built up your knowledge of the media industry and how the kind of mucky side of football works, the money side. And you had an idea from working for Ball Street of how content creators were making a living.
Yeah.
Is that when you realised that the Fighting Cock could be a standalone business in itself?
Yes. About a year into Ball Street, I realised that there was two things, actually. I realised that that you can make money on smaller audiences for podcasts. I realised that there's a different value in different audiences depending on which format they're using. So if you're using YouTube, then 20,000 views isn't going to be it's about as valuable as 1,000 listens on a podcast. And it's all about how media is consumed. So if you consume YouTube in front of your on your phone or on your laptop computer, there's so many other things that can distract you. You'll get alert, you'll get a pop notification, an email will come through, you'll stop watching that video, or the video is boring. You've just got so many options to move away from the video that it's the CPM, which is like the cost per thousand listens. So, you know, if you get paid 20 quid per thousand views on YouTube, you're doing really well. But the reality is that's what you might get paid on your podcasting. So, it's about how captive the audience is and how engaged they are. Now, what the beauty of podcasts is, and you're found, like, don't think about The Fighting Cock or The Extra Inch. Think about another podcast that you love, and then think about how much you just love to be a part of that conversation with them. Like, you just want to sit down and talk. Like, I want to be interviewed by, what's his name? Want to be on Relestifer. It's funny.
Oh, yes.
It's so funny. It's such a great form. I've got no value there. I'll never be able to be in there. I never will be anywhere near someone who sits in that chair, but I love it, right? So you love sitting there and listening. Well, there might be a different one. It's the same thing with podcasts. So people are engaged. They identify with the people on the podcast if they like them. And they really want to be a part of that conversation. But also, because we're so open on the podcast, they feel like they know us as well. The amount of, I'm sure you've had this as well, Wendy, is when you're doing the socials and stuff like that, people are coming up to you and they're so lovely and so like open that it's almost, you take a step back a little bit. I found it's like, whoa, like, and then they'll bring up something that you've brought up but you've forgotten you've even said. Like, how the fuck do you know that? But obviously, you know now that that's what it is, and they're just remembering stuff and funny things that resonate. Like, they know stuff about my missus, and at the socials come up to them and say, oh, how's your chickens? And my missus is like, how the fuck do you know I've got chickens? Or whatever it might be. So my point is here, right, is that the podcast audience is valuable. And I realize that why we didn't have like 100,000 or 200,000 people listen to it every week. We had, you know, 20,000. And of those 20,000, a certain percentage of it, which, you know, we created as a thing, it's going to be very, involved and engaged with what we're doing and want to be a part of it and want to support the podcast. So, yeah, it became apparent to me that there are several ways I could make money out of doing this without giving up any of the quality. So it was that point where, I realised this was a possibility. But it wasn't until I made the leap, so I left Wall Street, that I was 100% convinced that it could work. So that's the difference. It's one thing knowing that it could, or thinking, this might work. If I can give it more time, if I can find one more brand deal, then now's the time to go. But it reached a point where I was just like, I've just got to fucking see if this works now. And if it does, it does. If it doesn't, I'll just get a job in a pub or something.
That's the bit that I struggle with. I can't quite get my head around how brave that decision was to sort of make a leap without having something firmer in place. But I guess you had you knew what you needed to do. It was just doing it.
Well,
kind of practical skills as well that you had to learn in that time? Because I'm thinking, you know, if you're setting up for yourself, that sounds like a great idea, but then you've got to do things like a tax return. You've got to keep on top of your bookkeeping. You've got to have invoice knowledge to be able to send out the appropriate invoice to different companies you're working with. All of these things. Did you have to teach yourself how to do these things?
I've got an accountant, first of all, that does all that. So I don't want to. I cannot and I will not put myself through the stress of having to manage my books, and it's the cost of paying someone else to do it is so worth it. It's the stress, you know, like, people are obsessed about money, but the reason why people don't earn money is because they want their lives to be less stressful in the future. Want to be relaxed, but they'll put themselves through undue stress now for this sort of distant future that may or may not exist. So if I can pay an accountant each month to sort that stuff, to do my tax returns, do my personal tax returns, then to me that's money well spent. That's making my life better, and that's the point of money, isn't it? Making your life better. So yeah, there's that invoicing. So I've been doing freelance work before even I joined Wall Street. But when I worked at Exposure, I was doing freelance editorial, freelance copywriting, that sort of stuff. So that wasn't the practical aspects of it, wasn't an issue. I just want to go quickly back to something that when I made the jump out, I had a contract with a betting company, which was going to run for another 12 months from the point where I'd left Wall Street. So I knew that I had a wage from Wall Street, right? I knew what that was, and I knew what I could live on. And then I had this contract, and I only had to make another maybe 10 grand on top through the year to get within my living, which would mean I could live without having to worry about debt. I wouldn't have been rich by any stretch of the imagination, or wouldn't have been had a very comfortable life, but at least I wouldn't have to worry about paying the bills. So I had that, and then I had Acas, which would make up a part of that, but not a huge amount, because you don't get paid a massive amount for Acas. So I just thought, well, if I can pick up a bit of work here and there, I can devote all my attention to The Fighting Cock and just see what's out there. Then surely I can make this work. Now, It was at that point where we decided that I could do Patreon. We could make Patreon a thing. It was about 3 months after I quit, I think, where Patreon became a thing. If Patreon hadn't been a success, right, and that there are 700 plus people now that pay for that content, then I would 100% with that's gone back to work, because my deal with that betting company is, I'm currently taking them to court because they haven't paid. Acast have changed their metric in terms of how they quantify what a podcast listen is, which means that all podcasts have seen a substantial drop, because previously you could listen to the podcast, a part of the podcast at home, a bit on the train, and a bit where you got to work. That would quantify as free listens, which isn't valuable to an advertiser. They want to know how many individual unique people are listening. So we lost money revenue from Acast because about a third of our audience went with their new metric. In reality, that was always the audience, but it was more concise, wasn't it? It's more scientific about what is. So we lost an audience there, which made that number of total listens reduced, so that it made it very difficult for us to go to new potential brands or partners and say, look at our figures, aren't they amazing? Because what we've actually seen is a 30% drop. So they're going to be like, well, hang on, there's a podcast drop here. The audience was this big previously. People were buying for that. So it's very complicated and a difficult situation. In the long run, it will be for the better, but it meant that revenue from Acast dropped as well. And I would have been without Patreon completely and utterly fucked, which is why it's such a massive, massive thing. And without, like I said, like essentially 720 people paying my wages. And it's an incredible thing, which is why right now we're putting out a piece of content every day, because people need it, I guess. And it's a bit of a thank you now for me to work as hard as I can to ensure that there's content for people to listen to, or have stuck with us, who have joined Patreon, to have as much content as they can consume from us for the price that they pay.
I have to say, if I wasn't getting the Patreon content just for being part of the collective, I would 100% be signed up. The content is superb. And the thing that I've noticed is it's allowed you to sort of veer away from talking about Spurs.
Yeah.
Which has always been a bit of a passion of yours. You've always wanted to do a separate podcast for as long as I can remember, being in the group, talking to everyone. You've always wanted to do kind of a current affairs or a pop culture style podcast where you just talk about things that are on your mind, funny stories with, you know, our mates, basically. And the No Holds Barred podcast, which Patreon subscribers get, is so good. It's a fantastic piece of content in itself. But it's not just that. You're doing specials, aren't you? This week, for example, or last week, you recorded a special with a nurse who's helping treat COVID-19 sufferers, which was just fantastic. You've recently released a podcast with two pilots to talk about the experience of flying planes and it's like.
Honestly, the most enjoyable conversation I've had in a long, long time. That was
so good. The blind runner Tim, who you were asking about how a blind person knows when to stop wiping their ass, which is just
the best one someone sent in was have you ever been caught masturbating? And he's like, no. And he's like, well, how, you don't know. You could have been. And what was great about that conversation is that he listens to the podcast, so he knows what we are.
He's lovely.
He's so good. I'm honestly, mate, he's a lovely, lovely man. He'd be listening to this, no doubt. But and he was just so open, and I knew from the minute talking to him that I could have fun with it. Like it wasn't a really let's have a really serious conversation about you being blind, because everyone knows it's fucking like everybody. There isn't a person under the sun who doesn't appreciate how difficult life must be if you can't see. Right? So let's not have that conversation again. Let's actually have a bit of fun with it and make it lighthearted. And actually, let's ask the questions that people want to know. What is interesting about being blind? Like, how do you use adult material? How do you form a relationship with someone you can't see? And that's some of the things you see. Like, you don't know, you know how your wife's face looked by a pinprick that you can see through, and you've spent time studying her face to understand what what the person you're married to and you love looks like. That's incredible to understand what that is, right, and how your brain works. So it's about that. Yeah, I mean, I've loved it. I really loved it, Wendy, man. I mean, Noah's Bar was also always an opportunity to get to talk about things other than Spurs, and like, I do love the club. But everybody knows how stressful it can be and has been over the last year following Tottenham. And if it's all you do, constantly, all day, every piece of work, every invoice you send, it's around the football club. It drives around the bend eventually, as much as you love. So yeah, Noah Hosbard really gives us an opportunity to talk about other things. And what's been really good to come out of this period of isolation is that we've had to be creative about what we can do and who to talk to. So how I've found it working is I'm not doing anything to seek out these people. I'm just having conversations with people. I think, oh, fuck, that'd be interesting. Like talking to Ben about the pilots, and I've always been terrified of flying. So it makes sense to have a conversation from someone who's scared of flying to someone who flies there all the time, find out what the fuck's going on in airplanes and why am I scared and why you're not. And I did that conversation with a guy who, Austin, Bethnal Green Bear, who works in the city, earned lots of money, and then just left to work in guest houses in Iceland because he needed a change in his lifestyle. From that, honestly, Windy, we've got an absolute banger. This is going to aid the podcast a little bit. But Friday this week, which will be the 10th of April, we're talking to a guy who bought some Bitcoin in 2017. And that's all I'm going to say. It's honestly one of the best stories I've ever heard. I'm recording that with him tomorrow.
I'm so excited for you. You're getting to do this now, and I would urge anyone who's considered becoming a patron to the Fighting Cock, do it for this month. Listen to all the back catalogue of podcasts. Listen to the Bitcoin podcast, and I guarantee you won't want to give up your monthly subscription, because there's so much good stuff coming out.
There is. I know this isn't a push, right? But that's a great point. Is if you haven't got a lot of money and you want access to it, like £6, you've got a month to do this. Just download everything we've done. Download all of the No Holds Barred. There's like 56, 57 episodes of that. Download it all, and that's yours. Then you don't have to. You can just cancel your thing. And then in 6 months' time, sign up again and download it all again if you want. Mm. If you haven't got the money, if you don't want to support or you can't support, then that might be a good way to do. But yeah, it's so much. It's I'm finding it really, really fun to do. And it's great because I had this idea about this podcast called Story for such a long time, where I wanted to just talk to ordinary people. Everybody has a story. Or Spooky, you've got a story. Windy, you've got a story. Spooky has a story. The stuff that we can find that's interesting to say. It's just you can't dig into everybody, can you? So you wait until someone pops up and says, I've got something to say, and then you find out if it's interesting or not. But yeah, everybody has a story. And so I just applied it to this now. So it's I'm really, really, really enjoying doing it.
There's one more thing I want to talk about, and that is something you've kind of touched on yourself a little bit already. You've become quite well known in your own right. You've got a following away from the Fighting Cock now, partly through Bull Street and partly through your channel, James and Fluff. For now, you said, you know, James is a dear friend of yours who you sat next to at Bull Street and got to know, and you two have some real natural chemistry to the extent where you've actually got two fan-made Twitter accounts dedicated to that side project, which is just mad.
Yeah.
It must all have an impact on your ego. I mean, I know, because we're very, very close friends and we talk daily, I know that you are a very resilient character and you don't let any criticism get to you, whereas I've been guilty of that in the past, and you've given me plenty of advice about, you know, just ignore them, they're jealous, etc, etc. But it must take its toll. How do you cope with it?
I am impacted by criticism. I'm not like, in fact, I hate it. And I hate it. If someone knows me and criticizes me, I find that really difficult.
Mm.
Some bloke on the internet digs me out like fucking nothing, does it? Mm. It's just it's not real. It isn't real. Most of the time they don't feel it. If it's someone you know, that's a little bit different. But, yeah, generally, like, you put your head above the parapet, you're opening yourself up to this stuff. You can't not expect it, and you can't let it impact you in any significant way, because you'll go fucking mad. But I know there are aspects to, it does get to you sometimes, especially if you feel like... There's been a couple of times where I'm skirting around things, I'm not really answering your question. There was one time where I made some bad decisions about some content of the Fighting Cock, which will haunt me forever. And it was like that film we made, the 1882 film, the Charlton one. And I had reservations at the time, but I just, because I paid the bloke to do it, it was like £100 or something, which I had no money about then. I just kind of felt the urge to stick it out, even though I knew it wasn't right. And I got absolutely drawn over the coals for it, and rightly so, because it was shit. But I learned from that point that if you do something and you know it, and you know, and you put it out anyway because you don't have the bollocks to say, actually, this is not right enough, and then you get stick for it, then that's on you. If you're doing so, if you're on Twitter and you're talking in a certain way that you know is going to generate a certain amount of negative energy coming way, then this is your choice to do it. You can't then moan about it. if someone's just coming out of the blue and criticizing you for something that's completely unjust, then it's literally not worth thinking about. I remember this guy on Twitter, every Friday night he'd have a drink and then just start calling me a C word on Twitter, like out of nowhere. Just like, do you know you're a C-bomb? And that was easy to ignore. It's weird. Like, he's pissed up. He's probably, life isn't going the way he wants it to go. And he looks at someone else who's sticking his head above the parapet again. I'm not saying look at someone else who's being successful. That's not what I'm saying. We weren't successful. We were just doing a pod. But what we were doing was putting above the parapet and going, no, hello, look at me. And that's when people take shots at it. All right. So I wouldn't say I was really resilient, but I can pick as and when what. I know when some criticism is just and when it ain't. And the hardest stuff is when it comes from, you know the boys in the Fighting Cock, if someone says something like, oh, I've done something wrong, my instant reaction is just to brick wall them. Like, not like out of my life, just brick wall aside and like ignore it. And it takes a while for that feeling to subside and then go, actually, you were right. Mm. And that's still kind of, I haven't mastered that yet.
Your judgment's been pretty good though. I mean, a couple of slip ups in 10 years.
Not bad.
Most people would be pretty happy with that, right?
Not bad, yeah. There's been more than a couple, but there's been a couple that really kind of hit home.
So yeah. I guess the place to finish is, what's next?
Fuck, what's next? I don't know, do you have a plan? No plan, just carry on. Jump on opportunities as they come. Make sure you make the right decision about those opportunities. And that's it, really. My ambitions are all about, they're much smaller than they were, previously. Like, I wanted to own a home, and I wanted to have money, and I wanted to be able to buy nice trainers and drive a nice car, and I wanted to, all that shit. And I wanted a football club with cheaper ticket prices. I wanted the world to give me so much. But I've realised that all I want, I live out in the Wiltshire, out in the sticks now. I talk about it often enough, people are aware. I'm with my missus, who I love dearly. My stepkids, who I love dearly. We've got a lovely little part of the world. I just want to maintain this, mate. And I think I can do that by continuing to do what we've done previously and just identifying those opportunities and continuing to do stuff. And I know this is like the most obvious thing in the world, but the world is full of people who don't do stuff. Just do stuff. And I swear, opportunities will come to you.
That's a motivational quote to end on.
Yeah. Well, don't, because it makes, there's more room for us. Like, more of the people will do. But I'd be happy if none of you bastards did anything. Then I'll do the shit and get all the stuff.
Just tell us what to do. Flav, where can people find out more about Fighting Cock, Patreon, you?
Patreon is www.patreon.com. That's patreon.com/thefightingcock. And I guess if they want to find out more about me, it would just be by listening to that content, because I'm on every single piece. I'm sick of people. I can't listen back to any of it anymore. I'm sick of my own voice. I hate it. I won't listen back to this. I just can't hear myself speak anymore. And I'm surprised people don't go mad with it. But yeah, so we're producing daily content on Patreon. Every day it's either a podcast, a film, or it's generally a podcast or some video. So yeah, other than that, just listen to the podcast, keep supporting, and download the Extra Inch every week as well.
Oh, bless you. Flav, thank you ever so much for being so open. It was a fascinating conversation.
If you say so, Windy. Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.